The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. If you count on the hill, it's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. It does settle in your soul. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa with Jefferson State of Mind. I am here with my co-host, Shelley Mack. How are you, my dear?
I'm lovely. How are you?
Talk about being self-indulgent. Just kidding.
Well,
she,
you asked.
She is lovely. Talking about lovely, we're also here with Christina, our producer. How are you, Christina?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful.
Great. This is a pre-recorded program, and we are broadcasting from KCNR Studios, downtown Reading. You can hear us on 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better, 1460 AM, and we podcast live all over the world on KCNR1460.com. KCNR1460.com. And we also archive forever and ever and ever and ever. And Shelley and I are here today with the candidate for supervisor in District 3 in Shasta County, Wynn Carpenter. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. I'm pretty interested in hearing what you have to say on different things. But one thing I really found fascinating, and this is something I think that's come up with a lot of candidates, there are a lot of people who run for office here that haven't really, I mean, not to say that their ties to the community aren't good, but they haven't been really around a long time. Your family's been here for seven generations. Can you kind of expand on that? That's amazing to me. I mean, you've been here, you guys have been here forever. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we've been here since before California became California. So people living up in the mountains, you know, and tribal members, because I am a Pitt River tribal member on my mother's side of the family, and it goes back quite a ways. So that's where it originates. All the rest of the Caucasian part of the family, if you will, coming in and all the mix, they're from everywhere, you know, Scotland, Ireland, you know, other places, just back east in general. So who knows where the melting pot actually occurred. So yeah, they're from all over, but we do have deep, strong roots here in Shasta County, specifically northeastern Shasta County, which is District 3. So yeah, I've lived in District 3 all my life except for when I was gone away to university, and when my wife and I were working in different living and working in different counties in California and in Oregon, and we were only gone for probably about 10-12 years, and then we came back to raise our children because we knew that this is where we wanted to raise them, and this is where it was going to happen because we were near family and friends, and, you know, we could enjoy having them grow up with their cousins and so forth. So it worked out well for us to come back to Reading.
That's neat. And you have two children.
I do.
You have a granddaughter.
I do, yeah. My son and his wife, they got married about, almost 3.5 years ago, and they have
sitting on a bar stool.
How you doing out there, everybody? This is Terry Raposa, my partner Janet Chandler. How are you, Janet?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
And we are here on Jefferson State of Mind. We broadcast live from downtown Reading at KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM. We are streaming live all over the world at KCNR1460.com. That's KCNR1460.com. And we are here with our producer, Christina. How are you, my dear?
Hello. I'm doing great, as always. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Well, this morning we're pretty excited. We have a friend and a patriot on the line here. It's Dr. Douglas Frank, and Doug has been all over the United States, all over the state of California. He's one of these hands-on patriots that will get in there and roll up his sleeves and get in the trenches with the folks. And I think, for me anyway, I think that Dr. Frank has been that person when it comes to finding the anomalies. You notice I'm using the word anomalies, Doc, in the machines. He was the first person to get out there and really get into the counties and doing it, very unselfishly and just a lot of respect for this man. So how are you doing this morning, Doc?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for noticing and pointing to what I'm doing. I think of it similar to you, and I joke about it with people. You know, when I first started doing this work across the country, I thought, you know, I could do all this stuff by Zoom and phone calls and all this. No, it doesn't work. You've got to do it boots on the ground. And the more I work around the country, the more I identify with Jesus. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, he started the most successful movement in the history of the world, and he didn't send emails. He went town to town, meeting the people where they are, boots on the ground, rolling up his sleeves. And that's what's working. And so, you know, and I know you are working too, but when we roll up our sleeves and meet the people locally, that's when we win.
You know, that's so great, Doug, because, you know, really and truly, if you've ever been to Williamsburg, Virginia, which is the largest living history exhibit in the world, I think. I know it is in the United States. It's neat because the churches were all out in the countryside, and the parsons and pastors used to come to the center of town, out to the town square, and they do some preaching and teaching, et cetera. And I think what you just said was just so spot on as far as you going different places. Now, you're in Alaska right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm up here in Juneau. I've got a talk tonight and another talk tomorrow in Juneau, and then I'm off to Fairbanks. I'll be there a couple of days, and then Kenai a couple of days, and they've got me flying around the state. But it's pretty rainy and kind of gloomy because
yeah.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, you know, it is. And that's something about Alaska, the state of Alaska being so unique in that way. I mean, you don't need a car. You need a plane pretty much to go everywhere.
Yeah.
You probably have your pilot's license.
Yeah, I know
if you
people
live
that
there
have their own private planes. That's
absolutely
how they get around.
Anyway, you'll be coming to Redding here in Shasta County. We're excited about that. I believe that's December the 16th, and you'll be at the Red Line Inn, and we'll be passing more details on along about that. But I'd really like to get your take. I mean, you've been so instrumental for us and a great example in your seven steps and teaching us how to get to where we need to get to. And Shasta County arguably, well, isn't even arguably, is the only county that actually told the state to go pound sand, got rid of the machines, and, of course, the state is backed up on us as far as passing some laws, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But you're going to come here. Where do we go from here? Where do you think that Shasta County needs to go from here? Go ahead.
Well, I love that question, and you're right. Shasta, I have these seven steps, and I tell people that I derived these seven steps to getting it's called seven steps to taking back our election. And you guys have done so. You've taken back your election. And the way I developed the seven steps wasn't by just, excuse me, sitting around, you know, with a pipe in my mouth next to the fireplace one night. It's been out there, boots on the ground, learning what doesn't work and what does work. And, you know, I have more negative examples than positive examples. But one of the lessons that I've learned is that no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. That's a military idea, and it's a brilliant way of thinking. And I think of every county, every state, every city as like a game of chess, and every game of chess is different. So, you know, we came up with a strategy. It follows basically the seven steps, and you guys pulled it off. I appreciate that. That I was involved throughout, but I really give the credit to the grassroots. They stepped up and they delivered. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, when you win, I'll stand in the audience and clap. Well done. It's not about me. It's about the locals taking back their elections. And the beautiful thing about it is if they're following the seven steps, once they've completed them, they didn't just get back their elections. They've also established the fact, I mean, they've established teams of citizens that are doing what our Constitution intended. They're actually being the government. You know, America is an experiment in self-government. So for them to start being the government and acting like it, thank goodness, now they're taking back control, which is what they should be doing. We shouldn't be allowing the states to centrally control our elections. So I rambled a little there, but I'm making the point. Shasta has a functioning citizenry that's functioning like the government, like the Constitution intended. And I know, you know, I would bow to you any day. You've read the laws of your own county and state more than anybody that I know of. In other words, you're using your own tools, I call them the First Amendment weapons, very successfully. So that being said, your question is, all right, now what? Now what do we do? Because every move we make, the state is making several counter moves trying to stop us, just like in a real war. You know, when you win one battle in the war, the enemy just doesn't say, oh, okay, you win, see you later, you know, good job. No, 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 they start building new fronts and new fights. So I even say so in my seven steps presentation, that once you finish that, where you go from there kind of depends on the local situation. Well, you have some interesting local situations. One of them, for example, is the state's, there's a recall effort to try to recall Kevin Cry. That's one aspect. Another aspect is the state is panicking, trying to stop other counties from following suit. So they're putting in emergency resolutions and legislation to try to stop other counties from following. But we have stuff there. So I would say, and then the third thing I would think is important is people fatigue, movement fatigue. So I would say those are the three elements I would focus on when I'm there in terms of what comes next. First of all, let's step up and defend Kevin. And to do that, we're going to need to keep the people in the community aware of what's happened, why it's happened, and the importance of maintaining majority in your county commissioner so that, you know, the recall effort doesn't succeed. But, boy, are we up against an enemy there because the money is flowing in because the state doesn't want you to maintain control. So that's one aspect we got to work on.
Yeah, and just second, to elaborate on that one, and I want to take each one of these because that's such a great point. When we recalled Leonard Modi, who was the minion of Gavin Newsom's, we recalled him, and the state didn't like that very much. In trying to recall Kevin Cry, they've gone after a man who has been stellar in a lot of the things he's done as far as with the county. Although the real credit goes to Patrick Jones, who is the person, along with Chris Kellstrom, are the two supervisors that actually understood what their jurisdiction was. Therefore, they interposed and they nullified those machines. Kevin came along a little later. Thank goodness he did. And I think that the issue to recall him is just because in his district it's a little more liberal. The real deal is that California, as you said, is changing the rules on us. They've now changed the recall law here to where if somebody does get recalled, guess who appoints that person? The governor. The other thing on AB 969, which I know you wanted to talk about, on AB 969, we have a law that's been passed, even though we had gotten permission, we had gotten everything going to use paper ballots and hand count, even though we had gotten that done, the state went ahead and turned against us and said, okay, you're not going to be able to do that, we're going to stop you from doing it, which to me is adversarial, of course, but everything we do seems to be an adversarial move by the state to stop us from doing what we already had constitutionally and legally to do. So you had a second point, sir.
Beautifully said, by the way. And that's why, remember when I said no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. It's like a game of chess. Every move we make, there's a counter move. And the nice thing about Shasta is you guys are ahead of the state. As you pointed out, they're in reaction mode. But the moves they're making are to try to prevent other counties from joining in. Now, before we leave the recall thing, I'll just reiterate that. It's important that the community be aware of what Kevin has done and that they need to support him and continue to support him, because that maintains the majority. On the other hand, I think it's also important that, as you pointed out, Patrick Jones is the one. I met with him privately, and I so respect his approach. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy from out of town comes in, the wackadoodle conspiracy theorist guy comes into town, that's me, and I show him the fraud in his election, and he didn't just go, oh, my goodness, the sky is falling. No, he investigated it. He looked at the law. He entered into a process. He and I had hours of phone calls over months. He made rational, logical moves forward. So people should need to know that, too. In fact, he's contacted me again, knowing that I'm coming to town. He wants to plan strategy. He's a good guy. So it's not just one person that made this happen. It's an entire movement of people behaving like the government, which is why you're winning. So, you know, as I go around county to county around the country, I'm teaching people, stop rolling over and giving up your constitutional powers. Use them. I have a funny way of putting it. I say you need to use all of your First Amendment weapons to their full extent. Otherwise, we're going to end up having to use our Second Amendment weapons, and we don't want to do that. We want to win with our First Amendment. And the beautiful thing about the Constitution is it's so powerful. It empowers the citizens. But most of us don't even know it. You know, it's embarrassing. You can stand in front of a group of people and say, you know, tell me the five freedoms guaranteed to you in the First Amendment. And maybe 10% of them might get three of the five.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's such a great point. Also, it's really the 10th Amendment. We keep talking about we the people, we the people, we the people.
Yeah, this nullification thing, right.
Well, no, the 10th Amendment, the 10th Amendment really sums the whole Constitution up. Basically, what people get confused about is they seem to think that the federal government has plenary power, which means absolute, which they do not.
Right.
And the compact was the compact by the states. And like Jefferson said, the state of Virginia is likened to the state of Spain, France, and Great Britain, which means the state of Virginia is a country. And when the countries got together and formed a compact, which is a legal contract between legitimate governments, when they formed that, that's how we came about. See, the federal government is the creation of the states. When you look at the 10th Amendment, we always talk about we the people, we the people. When you look at the 10th Amendment, you look at that and you say, okay, rights that are not delegated. Well, you can't delegate to somebody if you're on equal terms. The simple word delegate means to give temporary trust and power over something you control. And that everything
else... states are controlling.
That's exactly. And everything reserved is... Reserved means... Reserved to the states and the people. Reserved means that we have ownership. We have complete ownership of that. So how can we be submissive to a power we created, to an entity we created? I mean, if you build a chicken coop, you can't turn around and say, hey, I want to be a hotel. No, you're a chicken coop. And if you're a chicken coop, then we're going to tear you down if you keep insisting on being a hotel. I think that the real deal is understanding we the people in the simple concept of the Constitution, like you said. And then I'll leave it with this. I think that the main thing that we need to understand, and we've been teaching this all across California over the last 12 weeks, jurisdiction, interposition, and nullification. That's what we learned in Shasta County. Who has jurisdiction, meaning who has control over something, who it has the responsibility over something. The interposition means you can stand between, and nullification means you can stop it completely. And I think that's what we need to teach people. Go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. I have an example I use for that. You know, I've been traveling the country, and I've been in a dozen counties now so far where when Antifa showed up in town, the people didn't call the sheriff. Mm. The people grabbed their rifles, they called their neighbors, and they met the Antifa on the street. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, is a good example. They called it Gun d'Alene. No violence ensued. What happened was Antifa gets out of their vans, looks at a group of citizens exercising the Second Amendment precisely how it was designed to be used, and they get back in their van and move on to the next county where the people didn't defend themselves. In other words, well, the problem is that people, and me too, I'm talking about myself too, until the last few years, I was complacent and I call the sheriff if you have a problem. No, it's my job to defend my community. It's not someone else's job. It's my job to teach my children. It's my job to run my government. But for too many decades, we've been paying other people to teach our children, and paying other people to run our elections, and paying other people to run our government. Well, how is that working out? Not very good, huh? So, in other words, we have the power. So when there's something going wrong, we need to step up. And that's kind of where you're talking about with the jurisdiction. We have the power. We have the authority. We just don't even know it. Okay, then the second thing is interposition. So when we say, hey, let me back up. So in my 7 steps, what I teach people to do is I teach them to find actual fraud in their community. Why do I do that? Well, because let's say that somebody votes fraudulently. Let's say that Terry Raposa goes to the polls on election day, and the poll worker says, sorry, Terry, you don't get to vote because somebody already cast a vote in your name. Well, you were just fraudulently deprived of your constitutional rights. Well, there can be no policy that deprives you of your constitutional rights that you are not entitled to nullify. You know, if the governor comes to you and says, okay, Terry, you're going to have to hand over all your guns, you can say, pound sand, Second Amendment lets me keep my guns. So you can nullify any policy that deprives you of your constitutional rights. So when the state comes to you and says, you have to use these voting systems, Terry Raposa can say, no, I don't have to use these voting machines because by doing so, you're depriving me of my constitutional rights. See, here's the evidence. That's so powerful.
Yeah,
that's why you need the fraud, because the fraud is actually every case of fraud, every fraudulent ballot is depriving one of your citizens from their constitutional rights. That empowers you to do the nullification. Now, I love your interposition point, too, and that's where the sheriff can come in, because the sheriff swears an oath to defend your constitutional rights. But he's not the only one who can interpose. All of our officers, you and me, we are supposed to interpose on behalf of our children. Every citizen has a constitutional obligation to respect the constitutional rights of others and to interpose when someone's constitutional rights are being violated. So that's why building the movement that you guys did in Shasta, where the people are stepping up and saying, we're not going to tolerate our constitutional rights being deprived of us anymore. We've read the law. We have the jurisdiction. We're going to interpose and protect our citizens, and we are nullifying all these state policies.
You know,
go ahead.
Well, one of the things, I mean, you know, you're talking about the sheriff, et cetera. You know, there's a couple of things there that I want you to touch on. You know, when we talk about that, see, here's the challenge we have. It's when we talk about jurisdiction, interposition, and nullification, for example, the supervisors, we've given them power. The people gave them power to do certain things. They have that power as long as we give them that power. We can't change that power unless we replace them or we go ahead and we amend the California Constitution or we amend, that would be it. And so the challenge that we've had is the state has come in and said, we're going to pass a law. We are your legislators. You elected us. We're passing a law, AB 969, and you can't use machines. So one of the issues we ran into with that is there's a thing called justiciability, and I'll do this as quick as I can. Justiciability is a very interesting position. You probably know what it is in a court case, but for those who don't, with justiciability, there's an issue of what is the jurisdiction basically of the court? Well, if the court has one side that's adversarial in their methodology, then all of a sudden you have a position to where you can actually show harm if you have standing because there's an adversarial position that keeps happening over and over and over again by an entity, even if it is an elected entity. Now, what they've done with AB 969 is they've said, okay, here's the deal. You guys can't do this. Well, we could do it a while ago. You said we could. Well, you can't do it now. Well, why not? Because we're not going to let you do it. And we're your elected officials to do this. And we're saying, wait a second here. How does that work? Well, it's just like with the recall. If if we recalled Leonard Modi, when we did that, they went after Kevin Cry. Now the governor can appoint and will appoint that particular position where we used to be able to vote for the person who would replace the recalled person. So what they've done is adversarial each time. And every time we do something, it's adversarial. And I think if we can go to court and use justiciability, I think we might have something. What say you?
Yeah, I agree. And you should. I like telling people that the legal avenue is important, and you need to keep pushing the legal avenue. But the legal approach is lengthy, time-consuming, and many of the courts are a circus anyway.
100%.
So I don't like to encourage people to put their faith or hope in 100%. Any court cases.
100%.
I appreciate the court cases because they teach, they inform, and they prove in court the facts. Like, for example, Judicial Watch and EIPCA, Election Integrity Project of California, sued Los Angeles, for example, and proved in court that their voter rolls were more than 25% full of people that were illegally in the rolls. Okay, now they had to remove these people from the rolls, and their rolls have since been repopulated with illegal voters again. All right, so in a sense, the legal process did not produce any net result because the rolls are all dirty again. But in the process, we proved in court that the rolls are dirty. So people can't argue about that anymore. That's a fact. So even though the net effect is not in our favor, the rolls are dirty again and the elections are corrupt again, the process of going to court allows all the facts to be brought to bear and make a public record. So right these days, I don't see court cases as having net effects that we like. I see them as having the process having education that we like.
Yeah.
So that's what I encourage people.
Well, the end part of that, the other part of that is that we'd go for a preliminary injunction. So if you don't get the preliminary injunction in 3 months, you drop it. That I didn't get to quite finish up the thought process. If we get a PI, they can't stop us. So that's the idea. And you're 100% right about a lengthy court case, which we would not want to do. But if we can get that PI by proving justiciability, we don't only have standing, but we prove harm.
That's fair.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we're kind of thinking with that. But here's the real deal, Doc, and you taught me this. You said this in so many words, even though when you were here, you didn't phrase it quite like this, but this was a synopsis, and I thought it was great, and I appreciate you for this. That is, you know, we keep hearing, we shall not, we will not comply. We shall not, we will not comply. Well, you don't comply with maybe a traffic law. You may not buckle your seatbelt, but you don't submit to slavery and tyranny. And this is submission. And I think the only way we do this is to just say no. To hell with everything else, just say no. What do you think, Doc?
I love that. And I didn't learn that myself. You know, this is why I tell people, traveling the country, I've been now in 800 counties, boots on the ground, and 48 states now. I've learned so much by watching the grassroots. They have taught me. So I'm like collecting all this wisdom. So let me give you an example. In Ohio during 2020, during COVID, Governor DeWine said, you know, you're not allowed to have gatherings more than 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
So a group of supermoms organized, and I'm not exaggerating, a dance ball, okay, in the Capitol, in a huge dancing hall. It was sold out, 600 people. We turned out, and we invited the governor. And we danced the night away. Nobody wore a mask. Nobody did. We had kids spin the bottle. We basically had a chicken pox party, man. We were kissing. We were dancing.
A soiree.
We had just in your face, you know. Why? Because if you don't use your constitutional amendments, rights, you lose them.
100%. We've got to stay with me, brother. We have to go on a break just because we're recording this, and it kind of just breaks on us. So stay with us, but I want you to continue that story after the break. So hang on with this, Doc. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Advisors, inviting you to my third town hall meeting with special guest Dr. Frank, Saturday, December 16th at the Red Lion Hotel. Are you ready for the truth about elections? Are you ready for a bombshell? Chair Jones' town hall meeting is free and open to all residents. Saturday, December 16th, 6 p.m. at the Red Lion Hotel, 1830 Hilltop Drive, Redding, California. Don't miss this event. Saturday, December 16th at the Red Lion Hotel, 1830 Hilltop Drive, Redding, California.
This holiday season, join the all-new tradition of lights and festivities for the entire family at Redding Garden of Lights.
Taking place November 17th through January 7th at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens.
At the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Explore over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more.
Redding Garden of Lights, presented by Mercy Medical Center, Redding.
Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Saddle up and ring in the new year the wild, wild way at the 2023 New Year's Eve Bash in the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Live music from Lance Michael Cornwell will keep your boots tapping and the dance floor hopping all night long. Enjoy a delicious buffet, dessert, swag, and drink specials. The fun starts at 8 p.m. Tickets start at just $65 plus fees. Or go VIP for only $300 per couple, including a one-night stay at a luxurious hotel. For tickets or complete details, visit WindRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Baby, there ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley low enough, ain't no river wide enough to keep me from getting to you, baby. Remember the day?
Oh, yeah. That's good. My normal partner, Wynn Carpenter, is not here, Doc, and when we hear music like that, a lot of times he likes to dance, and Wynn is one of those people who should never dance. You were talking about dancing.
I am also one of those people.
Okay.
My brother, whenever he sees me dance, he always says, please don't do that.
So we're here with Dr. Douglas Frank, a patriot and a friend. And anyway, Doc, we were talking about, which you made such a great point, and that is the people have to start acting like the government because they are. Elaborate a little more on that. That's such a great point.
Well, you know, it's like I've used the example of Coeur d'Alene, you know, where when the Antifa showed up in town, they didn't call the sheriff. They went out and lined the streets with their weapons. And because they are the government, they are the well-regulated militia. The Second Amendment teaches us that's what we're supposed to be. But we've been conditioned into kind of rolling over and letting, you know, having somebody else do the constitutional tasks we've been supposed to do. Now, I'm from Ohio. I know it's different in California, but in Ohio, we have constitutional carry. We're allowed to carry our weapons loaded anywhere we want, concealed, not concealed, you name it, except a school zone, you know, which I disagree with as well. I think that's the place we probably need them more than anywhere because we don't want 100%. That to be a soft target. But that's another topic. Mm-hmm. But what I do is whenever I go grocery shopping, I have a big old 45, and I wear it on my side of my hip like a cowboy. And why do I do that? Because if I don't use my rights, we're going to lose our rights. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my dream is that someday I'll be walking through the grocery store with my big old 45 hanging out, and little kid will see it, and, you know, he'll cling to Mama a little, and he'll say, Mama, that man has a gun. And then Mama will lean over and say, yeah, isn't that nice, honey? Don't you feel safe? That is what it's supposed to be, right? I mean, we use our rights or we lose our rights. And so when the governor of, we mentioned before the break, when the governor of Ohio said you couldn't meet with more than 10 people, we set up a big dance ball. And 600 of us showed up and danced the night away and kissed and danced and played spin the bottle. It was like a big chicken pox party. And we invited the governor to join us. He didn't show. The point is, you use your constitutional rights. You act like the government. You don't let them tell you not you don't let them convince you to relinquish your rights. You use your rights. And that's what you guys are doing in Shasta, which is why I'm so excited about you guys. I use you as an example over the country. You're an inspiration. There are other counties too. You're not the only one. We've got about 35 cities and counties around the country that are following suit. If they haven't already, so this is a growing movement. The people are waking up and starting to be the government again. you know, it's we all were kind of asleep for a while, but we're waking up.
Yeah,
slow,
I think that's
slow and sure.
I think that's a great point. You know, one of the things that you and I've talked about before, one of the challenges we have is that one size fits all. One size doesn't fit all. As you just stated, what happens in Ohio happens in Ohio. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. California,
yeah.
As every state, has control and jurisdiction over the policy, regulation, direction, and how elections are being done. So with our particular legislative body, they change the law. If they don't like something we're doing, they change the law on us, even if we were doing something lawful at that time. That's why we have to do it. That's why we have to not submit to their tyranny. I know that, and you probably knew about this because we got national attention, but Mother's Day, I believe it was Mother's Day of 2020, same situation was going on in California, except probably 1,000 times worse because it's California. And what was going on, they weren't going to let us do anything, so we had a rodeo. We had 5,000 people at a rodeo, and guys were coming in, bringing in cowboys with coolers of beer, walking in, everybody's hugging everybody. It was great. The highway patrol just kept driving by, and we had the militia help us out with that. Because we have a very good militia here in some of the rural counties. And a lot of people think of militias as being a bunch of guys out in the woods in camouflage, you know, playing war. That's not what they are at all. They do everything from helping to bust up marijuana grows that are illegal, helping the sheriffs, to helping find a missing child, to helping to make sure that assistance and different things are brought to fires or any other type of catastrophe we have. And I think it's a great.
You mean to tell me that there are people who are actually responsible and are behaving like the government? Lord help us.
I love you, Doc. You're absolutely right. You know, and that's the thing. So I think that, you know, and you were talking about being a constitutional carry. And I know this is a little off the subject, but I want to bring it up because I think it's pertinent. Since we were talking about the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and we were talking about, of course, the Tenth Amendment. And that is that the sheriffs, when we talk about how you have constitutional carry, you know, your sheriff is a constitutional sheriff. Well, every sheriff should be constitutional, although we do not have one in the state of California. Not one, not one. For example, in any county under 200,000 people in the state of California, the sheriff can issue a 26-150-B2, which is an open carry permit, right? It's only concealed carry. There is no open carry in California. It's only concealed carry, although we have a court case, Baird versus Bonta, that is going to probably change all that with a PI. Anyway, getting back to what I was saying, I went to our sheriff and I said, okay, I'm a law-abiding citizen, and, you know, I want a 26-150-B2, an open carry permit. And he looks at me and he goes, well, you know, I believe in the right of the Second Amendment, but I will not allow an exposed weapon. And I said, well, how do you use the word right and allow in the same sentence? And
right.
His comment was basically, okay, well, because, you know, what's the problem? 35 states do it. What's the problem? He said, well, because it would make my officers nervous. Besides, concealed carry is tactically superior. And I said, well, then why do your officers open carry? And his point was, well, my officers open carry because it deters crime. I said, so let me get this straight. You're an employee, and you guys can open carry because it deters crime, but as your employer, I'm not allowed to, even though it's my right. Is that pretty clear for you? So the real question of that is, and I think that, you know, and I love what you were saying about being able to go into a store and do that and protect your right, 100%. But the real bottom line to that is that, really and truly, isn't the discernment, even if you have to file for a concealed carry, even if you have to take your classes, isn't the real thing is the discernment you have when you use the weapon, not where you carry it? Isn't that the real question?
Yeah, and both my boys own sidearms as well, and I tell them if you ever take that out, you're prepared to fire it, and otherwise it stays in the holster. I mean, it's a discernment issue. But, you know, I never would want to hurt anybody unnecessarily.
Right.
But there are people that want to hurt me, and there are people that want to hurt my family, and there are people that want to hurt our community. And that's why we need to have those, weapons. And, you know, I use the example of my big 45. I got a big, scary looking 45 I like wearing on my belt. But I also have a smaller 380 that I tuck and hide away, and that's my discernment. There are times I want to be open, and sometimes I don't, and that's the discernment I think you're talking about.
So the bow tie is just a it's just a disguise for the Lone Ranger, huh, buddy?
Yes, the bow tie has surprisingly become like my motif. You know, it's like my calling card, and it's become a game now. As I travel the country, people give me bow ties for their states. So I've got about half of the states flag bow ties. It's pretty fun. I'm just my first day in Alaska, so we'll see if someone up here does it. But otherwise, I'll just be wearing my American flag bow tie. It's scientists. I'm a scientist. Scientists wear bow ties because if you wear a long tie, it gets in the beakers, you know. So you have to wear a short tie. So that's why traditionally the scientists wear bow ties, and I'm a bow tie guy.
You know, one thing I have to say is that also I love the fact that you're a patriot, not a patriot. In the fact that I know that you go around the country, folks, Doc does this. He gets reimbursed for expenses only. It isn't a thing where he goes around the country and people are paying him thousands and thousands of dollars to speak for a few minutes, which is amazing. Another of the many things I respect about you, Doc. But I know.
Well, thank you for saying that.
It's great.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that they charge a speaker fee and they come in and they talk to you and they give you a good speech and then they leave. And I'm not saying that's wrong. It's handy, you know. Like for example, I would encourage you guys to have Tina Peters up there to talk to you and do an event and show her movie and things like that, and maybe chip in a little remuneration to help her pay for
100%.
Her legal expenses.
Yes.
And I have nothing against that. But when I first started my work back in March, my public work back in March of 2021, I was seeing, especially in places like Arizona and Georgia, that there are all these leeches that come into the situation and they milk it for money. And I'm not talking little amounts of money. I'm talking about tens of millions of dollars have been leached from the grassroots. And I made the decision, and Mike Lindell inspired me, that I was not going to charge for any of the work I do. I just was going to ask people to chip in, you know, pass the hat, pay for my plane tickets and whatnot. And I got to tell you, that has turned out to be such a great decision, because now people know that I'm not coming in to sell you anything. I'm coming in to help you. It kind of clarifies the motives there, and that's worked out really well. You know, people say, well, then how do you survive, Dr. Frank? So it's funny because here we are at the beginning of December. This time 3 years ago, I looked at my wife, my lovely bride of 42 years, and I said, honey, I'm going to set aside my income for 6 months because I'm going to fight for my country. And 2 years later, we were sitting there at Christmas. That's a year ago now. And I kind of looked at her, and we were looking at the family budget, and I was like, And she's like, how long is this going to last? And I said, I think it's going to be the rest of my career. And she looked at me dead in the eye, and she said, that's all right, honey. It's a calling.
100%. And,
oh, my gosh. That's why I married well, and it is a calling. And it's like when Jesus sent out the 70 disciples on their little mission trip, he didn't say, go to the bank, you know, plan a budget, you know, plan the trip out, schedule it out. He said, no, grab your coat and your staff and go and put yourself at the mercy of the people that you're with. And if they accept you and are hospitable to you, work with them. And if they're not, dust off your sandals and move on to the next town. Well, I got to tell you, as I've been traveling the country, people are just being darling to me. They've cared for me everywhere I go. They feed me well. I sleep in hotels. And they pay for my expenses. And it's sort of vindicating. I know I'm doing the right thing because I'm making ends meet. And, you know, I suppose it's nice that I don't have a mortgage. And it's nice that my wife works. So I can make ends meet, you know. But people have been generous. I went pretty far into debt that first year. But, you know, Mike Lindell, for example, he spent all his personal wealth now. And I remember when I first met him in March of 2021, he and I were sitting here having dinner, and he said, you know, I got about $40 million laid aside for this effort. It's all my personal wealth. He says, I either I'm going to spend it now, or they're going to take it away from me later anyway. That inspired me, especially after I saw, you know, what was going on with all the grifting going on in Arizona and Georgia. I just said, okay, I'm going to do that same thing. If he can spend his $40 million, I can spend my $40,000. you know, I spent a little more than that, but that's okay. I'm coming back to even again.
Yeah, I think it's just very commendable. You know, and you're right about Mike Lindell. I mean, you talk about doing things unselfishly. That guy's given up everything to get out there in front. But again, I think that you know, it's so important that we realize it's what you do. But I think I wish more people would understand that each state is different. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And they have to start understanding that it's different and the battles have to be different. Also, the understanding that it has to be local first. But I know that, you know, when you were talking about how you travel a lot of different places and people just pay your expenses, we sort of follow that motif, the things that that we've been doing here, going to the different counties. We don't charge a dime. I'm theirs. If they want me for 5 days, I'm there. All I care about is if you feed me, you know.
Similar to me.
And that's something. So you're inspiring some people. But here's the real bottom line on a lot of this, which I have so much respect for you in this talk. And that is, you understand you got to get to the people. You understand it isn't about this speaker or that speaker or this soiree or this event here or that event there, or I get to go have dinner with so-and-so and rub elbows with 800 people. And it's only going to cost me about 10 grand for the trip, but it's worth it. You know, when you have all these different things that are going on, all these different situations, you still have to get out there and get the people out in the public, the people to understand, the moms and the dads. And people ask me, well, where do we find these people? Hey, school boards. You know, you look and see, to a degree, COVID was a blessing in regards to the fact that a lot of parents woke up. Fortunately, a lot of moms woke up. A lot of grandmas woke up. I wish, my good friend, we could wake up some more men in this country. What say you?
Oh, you're right on target. I love what Mike Lindell says. If we hadn't lost the election in 2020, we wouldn't know we lost our country. He says 10 years from now, he says, we're going to look back on these days and we're going to say, wow, all the things that happened had to happen, or we wouldn't have been able to fix our country. We wouldn't be able to get our country back. Well, it's the same principle with 2020 with COVID. If COVID hadn't happened, all those moms wouldn't have discovered that their kids are learning crap in school. It activated a whole army of supermoms. So the election activated a whole army of patriots all over the country. It woke us up out of our stupor. And the COVID woke up all these supermoms out of their stupor. And I agree with you. Our men are not as awake. But it's sort of like World War II. In World War II, the men went off to fight, and the women were the riveters. And now it's the other way around. The women are the fighters because the men, I'm generalizing, of course, but the men are the riveters. The men are kind of paying the bills so that the moms can be homeschooling their kids and the moms can be working at the school boards and picketing and whatnot. You know, I look at the movement in Shasta. You know, there are probably 100 women there in that group and maybe 10 men. You're one of the few ones, right? But the women are what are empowering the public movement. But the private funding is coming from the men. So they're engaged, but not in a visible way, I kind of find. So that would be my response to that.
Yeah, that's true. But a lot of these men actually lack testicular fortitude. And
you think?
Yeah, I had to explain that to a friend from New York what that meant. But, you know, the thing is that with that a lot of men have been neutered by what's gone on here. And I know that there's a lot of leaders in different parties in different places. It's more about their notoriety, which is the complete opposite with you and hopefully a lot of us. it's more about the notoriety than it is getting the job done. And the job is only going to get done by the folks, as you said. That's the people becoming the government. The people are the government.
Yes.
The 10th Amendment, the 1st Amendment, the 2nd Amendment, to protect all that. So I think we've come up with a local teaching thing that we've been doing, and I've been off about every weekend doing this, and that is, it's the silver bullet, how you take back your country, how you take back your state. Well, the first thing is you take back your, in California, which is where I am, and a lot of people say, you know, where California goes, so does the rest of the U.S. Well, there's a reason for that. Number one, we have the 7th to 4th largest economy in the world, depending on who you want to believe. The second thing about that is, in the House of Representatives, we have 52 people. We have 52. The closest one to us is Texas, is 38, and the rest are in the teens. So really and truly, California turns the head. We have a governor who is, I think, the spawn of Satan. And this governor goes out, he breaks his oath of office, he goes to make deals with China, which is a violation of Article 1, Section 10, Clause 4 of the United States Constitution, because he doesn't have the jurisdiction or the authority to go make a contract or an agreement with anybody without the consent of Congress, which he's done. He's made a deal with the state of Oregon to take out 4 perfectly good dams with the governor of Oregon. He made that deal, again, violating Article 1, Section 10, Clause 4. And more importantly, he has violated the Constitution of the United States in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, which we gave. Remember, we gave all that stuff to the government to do. If we want them to do it, they can go ahead and do it. If we want to change it, we have a thing called an amendment. A third of us get together, or two-thirds of us get together. We go ahead, we say we want to change this. Three-quarters of the two-thirds say, hey, we're going to change it, and the federal government can't do it anymore. That's an amendment. I think the main thing we have to be looking at, especially with this governor, is that he is overreaching everything, including being a felon. And I've said this in front of the Capitol. I've said this outside his office. Title 8, Code Section 1324 of the United States Code. Harboring and shielding an illegal alien is a felony. It's a felony, up to 10 years. And Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the United States Constitution specifically states, we gave naturalization and the jurisdiction of any kind of immigration to the federal government. We gave that to them. We haven't changed the Constitution. He has no jurisdiction with sanctuary cities, sanctuary state, sanctuary counties. There's no jurisdiction. It's against the Constitution. And I think that, again, making people aware of some of these things, where we need to stand is, we need to get them on the law, Doc. We need to get them on the law, which is what you're doing. We need to get them on the law and all this stuff.
Well, and I think that's where people are just, we've been conditioned for decades as a society to not even know our own laws and not even to know our own constitutional rights. And that's why when a governor comes in and says, oh, by the way, I'm going to do 1, 2, 3, nobody goes, well, wait a minute, stop right there. You don't get to do that. And so they get away with doing it. It's sort of like when our governor says, you're going to have to, you're not allowed to assemble in groups of more than 10. We said, screw you, pound sand, we know better. We're going to have a dance ball right in your face. I loved it. The super, when they were imposing these mask mandates, there's another group of super moms in my state. Gosh, I love the super moms.
Me too.
They would have shopping days. They would show up at like Kmart, 40 or 50 of them. They'd all go in, and then they'd all take their masks off and go shopping. And they'd shop a long time. You know, go ahead. Go ahead, push us out. You know, and after the third or fourth time, you know, the city is in turmoil because everybody's going, wait a minute. They didn't. Why are you not following the rules? Well, because we don't have to. And so we're not going to. So don't. I mean, if you had asked politely, would you all please do this because we have this concern, then we would consider it politely and agree or disagree, and that would be America. But we're not going to comply and roll over and let you trounce on our constitutional rights. In fact, we're going to make a point of exactly the opposite. And that's us being the government, us being, this wonderful experiment in self-government that America is. You know, I was reading Eric Metaxas's book, If You Can Keep It, a couple Christmases ago, and I was convicted because he was talking about all the rights we have that we're not using, just simply because we're conditioned out of it or we're unaware of it. And it made me feel really guilty because he was talking about the Second Amendment and how how we, it's not merely our right to carry arms, it's our obligation. It is my civic duty.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.